Welcome everyone to GojiraCast, where we will discuss every Godzilla movie. I've been watching Godzilla movies my whole life, and I love talking about them. I'm your Canadian kaiju, so let's get into it. In this episode, we are discussing the sequel to the movie that started it all, Godzilla Raids Again, released on April 24th, 1955. Directed by Motoyoshi Oda. Screenplay by Takeo Murata and Shigeru Kayama. Story by Shigeru Kayama. Produced by Tomoyuki Tanaka. Starring Hiroshi Koizumi, Setsuko Wakayama, Minoru Chiaki, Takashi Shimura. Plot. While a pilot named Shiochi Tsukioka guides a fishing trawler, another pilot, Koji Kobayashi, faces engine troubles and makes an emergency landing on Iwato Island. Tsukioka is sent to rescue Kobayashi, and they both encounter two giant dinosaur-like creatures battling to the death. Godzilla is fighting a new monster. The pilots escape as the monsters tumble into the sea. Showa era, 1954 to 1975. This is the second film in the Showa-era series of films, made and released in under a year from the first film in order to keep the momentum of the first film's success. On June 2, 1959, Warner Brothers released a re-edited and English dub version. It was renamed Gigantus the Fire Monster. Development. No time was wasted for the development of Godzilla Raids Again. A welcome home party for executive producer Owayu Mori took place just weeks after the Godzilla release in November 1954. During this event, Owayu Mori immediately sent producer Tomoyuki Tanaka to work on the sequel. No time could be spared. Tomoyuki Tanaka appointed a new director, Motoyoshi Oda, to helm the sequel. The first director, Ishiro Honda, was already onto his next film and they didn't want to wait. Fear of losing the momentum of the initial success seemed to be the driving force of the film's production. Now, Motoyoshi was a respected and popular director. His films weren't known for artistic achievement, but they were the type that made going to the movies fun. He is known for Lady from Hell, 1949, Tomi Ninjin, 1954, a Japanese horror inspired by The Invisible Man. Toho trusted Oda and wanted him to direct as many as 7 films a year. Godzilla design and special effects. One could claim that it was a rushed set, to say the least. The special effects director was Eiji Tsuburaya. The higher frame rate technique for filming was used once again. Well, for the most part. 3 total cameras were used for filming, 2 of which were set to a high speed, 1 set to a much slower 18 frames per second. This was an accident. The scenes, however, were still usable. This time around, Haru Nakajima portrayed Godzilla solely. Katsumi Tezuka still had an important role, this time portraying Godzilla's opponent, Anguirus. Thankfully, the suits themselves got an upgrade. Lighter materials were used in the construction. Also, plaster molds of the performers were taken to better fit the physiques of Nakajima and Tezuka. As mentioned before, the Godzilla suit had some reconstruction to function better, but also as a redesign sculpted by Teizo Toshimitsu. In addition to the lighter materials, a motor in the head was installed to move the eyes and mouth. Powering this were batteries placed in the base of the tail. This did end up creating discomfort for Nakajima when donning the suit. Katsumi Tezuka had the tougher gig in a manner of speaking while performing as Anguirus. He had to crawl on his hands and knees for his seeings being a quadrupedal creature. Some trickery also had to be employed by the effects crew as the bottoms of his feet were exposed. Keep an eye out for some strategically placed trees, buildings, and various obstructions blocking the view. Again, it's important to point out the short turnaround time for the production of this film. There were new techniques such as hand puppets being utilized for close-up shots. Even a spray mechanism in the Godzilla puppet for his atomic breath. Toho's brand new soundstage number 8 was used for the Osaka miniature set. Problems with timing of the Osaka castle as it collapsed off-camera had to be rebuilt. Even the opening battle between Godzilla and Anguirus was tricky. Both performers ended up crashing into the water. With the new lightweight material suits, they couldn't be allowed to float. This meant the crew had to be present to make sure they didn't drown. There's definitely an argument to be made for a quick script to ensure a quick as possible release. but it cannot be argued the amount of work it still takes to make a Godzilla movie. So my hat's off to everyone involved in making this film. Is it a top 10 Godzilla movie? No. But it's better than Godzilla 1998, which was not made by Toho. Theatrical release. Although less successful than the first film, Godzilla Raids Again did moderate business. No one from the audience to the Toho staff was terribly impressed. Tomoyuki Tanaka did not consider it a success. Themes. There really weren't too many themes for this film, in my opinion, aside from consumerism itself. That's not a bad thing at all. That's the movie business. As a developing Godzilla fan, watching this movie for the first time a good 30 years after it was released, it was a letdown. When you have a franchise that is turning 70, not everything will blow your hair back. Look at The Simpsons, Saturday Night Live, and they're just in their third and almost fourth decades, fourth and fifth decades, respectively. But every now and again, we get spoiled once more. Shin Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One, just to name the most recent entries. There's a lot of life still left in Toho's Godzilla. Not to mention a fantastic companion Monsterverse from Legendary Pictures. Godzilla still has my trust, and basically the only franchise I will always go to the movies for. Let's talk about sequels. Ah, the curse of the movie sequel. So you've had great success on your first film, why not make a sequel? Maybe a trilogy, or even a franchise. There's also different kinds of sequels. Some that are made as quickly as possible, keep that in mind. Some that are made 20 to 30 years later. There are some absolutely fantastic sequels out there, such as Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan. This is a key example of having a compelling story that can attract a wide audience despite it being science fiction. Now, obviously, I have no problem with science fiction, hence a podcast about an atomic-born creature. But even today, science fiction, fantasy, films are still not considered a go-to option for compelling stories. I haven't seen a compelling story like this, despite its genre, until the TV remake of Battlestar Galactica. That series is a dramatic stage theater-level story that takes place in outer space. Much like Wrath of Khan, classic story themes are told incredibly with the original crew of the Starship Enterprise. It also gave us one of the best death scenes in cinema that is still referenced today. This is a sequel that solidified the Star Trek franchise. Of course, like any good franchise, it has its highs and lows, but it's a franchise that remains strong today in multiple formats. Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Now, this is a sequel that saved a franchise. Actually, I think it's more accurate to say it started a franchise. I think it also overshadowed said franchise because it never got any better than this, in my opinion. James Cameron turned a perfectly serviceable first movie into a sequel that's almost a reboot. But thanks to the handy time travel plot device, the original antagonist is now the protagonist. Of course, James Cameron isn't alone in this. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, Robert Patrick, and Edward Furlong all played their roles perfectly. Captain America: The Winter Soldier. The more I think about this movie, the more I think it should be in the conversation of one of the best sequels. Keeping it in terms of just the Captain America series of movies and not the full juggernaut MCU franchise, this movie elevates a somewhat generic character. Captain America has the same problem as Superman, in my opinion, basically a perfect being that can't be stopped. This movie, however, brought in the espionage genre to it. Fantastic casting of legendary Robert Redford plus the Hydra revelation that reverberated through the entire franchise. Winter Soldier brings depth where you typically wouldn't expect it. Not to mention, all of it sold beautifully by Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Samuel Jackson, Kobe Smulders, Anthony Mackie, Sebastian Stan, and Hayley Atwell, just to name a few, or maybe the entire cast. There are also some franchise killers. Now, I try not to focus on the negatives. This podcast is a celebration, but as a fan, I'm allowed to point out flaws. Here are some sequels that demonstrate flaws. Spider-Man 3. Oh my, where to start? Well, let's keep it simple. The director had control taken away, forced to cram in everything plus the kitchen sink, and so basically the only option was scorched earth. Again, this is just my opinion. And by scorched earth, I mean an incorrectly cast Venom and a dancing emo Spidey. What more can be said? Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And I thought Spider-Man 3 was bad. This is how you kill a franchise. At least the movie version for a very long time. instantly kill a beloved character and try to bring all the lore of the entire game franchise into the movie with poor explanation. Did Joel Schumacher direct this? Batman and Robin. I almost want to start a Batman podcast to talk about what's wrong with this movie. It nearly ruined George Clooney. I'll say this, when I play Arkham Knight, I need to change Robin's appearance away from the Chris O'Donnell clone. This movie is filled with great actors in their own right being directed to create a bad, bad movie. The point is, a sequel is a chance to give the audience more of what they want. It's a chance to really hone in on what you've created and put a nice polish on it. Look at TV, specifically The Simpsons. Season 1 is almost unwatchable. Season 2 is an insane leap forward and it was a clear foundation for the rest of the series that is somehow still going. A sequel can also be a cash grab. Get another one out there quick before people forget about the first one. I dare say that is what happened here with Godzilla Raise Again. I'm happy to say it's not a franchise killer, nor is it a franchise saver or even rejuvenator. There's nothing to rejuvenate. The first movie wasn't even a year old. I think it is fair to say that a lesson was learned. The following film, King Kong vs. Godzilla, wasn't released until 7 years later on August 11th, 1962. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. Relatively short, reflecting the subject. I've been watching Godzilla movies my whole life, and I love learning about how these movies came to be. I'm happy to share what I've learned, and most importantly, my fandom with you all. Please reach out to KanjiraCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads, and let's talk Godzilla.
Hey everyone, Lee the Editor here. Thank you all so much for listening to this, the second episode of KanjiraCast. If you heard any music or sound effects that you'd like to use in your own projects, or simply want to support the original artists, you can find all the links of the various assets used in the paste bin available in the description. We'd still like to shout out the original artists and encourage you to visit their respective profiles at the websites mentioned. For music, we recommend you check out the profile Tavari, that is T-V-A-R-I, on Pixabay.com. In terms of sound effects, we recommend that you check out the profiles Spotty Leonard and Pan Zen, both found on freesound.org. That's all for now. We'll see you all next time in Episode 3. Buh-bye!